No risk it, no biscuit.
Arizona Cardinals fans, do you see red? Are you part of the Red Sea? Then you are listening to the show for you, a podcast for Cardinals fans, by Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider perspectives. It's time to rise up and see red. Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. It's the season's over, and oh my goodness, we've got quite the show for you guys because the Cardinals are all over the news. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL Wire site for the Arizona Cardinals, and my co-host, Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com. He is part of SB Nation's network covering the Arizona Cardinals, also the host of the NFL Draft Breakdown podcast. Oh my goodness, Seth, what just happened over the last 3 days?
Well, the Cardinals won another home game in Seattle. I guess that ended up being significant for some reasons. And then apparently they're going to be on ZipRecruiter. Is that a sponsor of ours, or is it Monster Jobs? I don't know. Whatever the job blog that sponsors podcasts, we'll use them right now because the Arizona Cardinals are looking for arguably the two most important positions within the team, I guess head coach and quarterback.
And that is true. The season is over for the Cardinals. They finish 8-8. They defeat the Seattle Seahawks 26-24. Phil Dawson on 4 field goals, kicks one with about a minute 221 left in the game to take the lead. Seattle goes down the field and good old Blair Walsh misses a field goal wide right to give the Cardinals the win. They finish 8-8. They win their fourth out of 5 games, a fourth time in the 5 years in Seattle. Drew Stanton wins the game. Drew, you know, whole bunch of things, but that's not even the story. Because now Bruce Arians retires and Carson Palmer retires, and that's what our show is about. So we actually, what we're doing in this show tonight, recording on a Tuesday night as we typically do, we are pushing. So we get to push kind of our end of season review and awards that we'd normally do in this show. And this is all about Bruce Arians and Carson Palmer. So that we have that coming up on our show. We're talking retirement, Bruce Arians, candidates, what the Cardinals are doing, what they're looking for. We're going to talk about Carson Palmer. We're talking about quarterbacks. But before we do, we will talk briefly about the win in Seattle because that was a very fun game. So that's what we will lead with. Of course, telling you to let you know our friends at Harrys.com. Support this podcast, and we'd like for you to support Harry's, which is, you know, one of the, if you like to shave with a razor, make the switch. 3 million guys have. I switched over from the electric razor, but you don't have to pay the expensive blade price, and you can get you guys, all the listeners for Rise Up Sea Red podcast, you get a special deal. You go to harrys.com/CRED. You're going to get a trial run. So you're going to get the razor, you're going to get the blades, and you're going to get the foaming shave gel. It's fantastic. You get that whole set, you just cover the shipping for $3. It's worth $3. Try it out. You know you'll love it. And then from there, you can schedule when you want the blades to come, or if not at all. But test it out. You pay $3 for shipping. You get the shaving. You'll love it. Again, that's harrys.com/CRED. Let's start talking about that game. We'll just don't spend a lot of time on that. But what were your quick takeaways from that season finale, that win, that 26-24 win? Were you glad to see them win? Were you sad that they didn't? What did you take from that?
I mean, they lose their 13th. They're picking 13th. They win. They pick 15th. And it's just, I mean, really, at that point, does it matter? Honestly, it doesn't matter. No, it doesn't. So they pick 15th. it, and I think it means a lot. One, obviously, it means a lot because it was Bruce Arians' last game. I think going out on top, especially over what is your biggest rival, is important. You know, he kind of ends. He kind of backed up the final. That he has shown as being part of kind of who he is as a coach. You know, my house going in, and then they win, and he drops that my house again. As soon as the press conference starts, and so, you know, I think for all of that it was good. I thought you saw the warts of some things. Obviously, the first half defensively was amazing. I mean, fantastic. I think they allowed 41 first half yards, and then second half you again saw some of the concerns with James Betcher and his defense. Is he a guy that can match wits with the best in the NFL? Not just be good and not just be a guy that gets a top 10 defense every year, but is he a guy that, you know, when you face off against a Pat Shurmur, I guess, or when you get up against a Frank Reich or any of these guys that are kind of stepping into the spotlight, obviously Sean McVay in Los Angeles and Kyle Shanahan in San Francisco, is he a guy that can match wits with those guys? And looks like the answer is no. And that, I think, is your biggest concern with Betcher, and we'll get to him shortly, if that is going. And so, but overall, I thought, you know, it's kind of vindication for Drew Stanton. You know, he's the only quarterback that lost a game in Seattle in Bruce Arians' tenure there. I think it was a nice win, especially, you know, from an emotional standpoint for Arians in his career on. I think it left enough in the tank for a guy like, hopefully, Larry Fitzgerald to say, man, that's not really how I want to end my career. 8 catches for 55 yards or 9 catches for whatever it was. I want to go out. I want to do something a little bit more. That's a hope. But I think you were also a little bit excited about of linemen stepping up. Obviously, the defense in the first half was unbelievable, and so you continue to be excited about that, and you just are hoping for consistency from those guys moving forward, because that is the one thing about this team, and we'll get to the job appeal to the masses and whatnot, but they could return virtually maybe even 10, depending on what they want to do with Tremont Williams on defense. And that's really unheard of in today's NFL.
And for me, for me, it was a fantastically fun game. It was everything that you could walk. And here's the thing. It matched the way the Cardinals win ball games with Carson Palmer. That's how they won it. They jump out early. They, against good teams or bad teams, they let the team get back in it. They make the plays late. Only this time there was a missed field goal. And, you know, anytime that happens, and I see this as karma for Seattle with Blair Walsh, they should know better. After all, they only won a playoff game because of Blair Walsh when he was with Minnesota. Why would you go and signed that guy? Now, granted, Steven Hauschka had his issues and had his issues against the Cardinals in particular, but, you know, that it was sweet. And a season that wasn't what it could have been, and then turned it to be kind of entertaining at the end of the year, to get a win, to get to 8-8. It's, for me, draft status be damned, winning is fun. So if you've got a bad team or if you've got a mediocre team, winning just feels good. It's more fun to watch. It's more fun to cover. everything about it is great. And the better part was that it was even sweeter to know that even though the Falcons still won, that the Cardinals helped eliminate the Seahawks from the playoffs. And it's the sort of thing now that there's going to be big changes. It's the sort of thing that you build upon for the next year. And it's not a win over a hapless Rams team in the season finale like they put a beat down on last year. This was a grown man game. Although,
tender game. And the other thing was, and somebody tweeted, I think it was Walter Sharp at Sharp Football. He's an ESPN guy or one of those guys. And he tweeted out and he said, Drew Stanton playing with whatever's going on in his knee. He refuted the Larry Fitzgerald tweet, but whatever's going on in his knee, basically on one leg, Drew Stanton on one leg with Larry Fitzgerald is really his only other weapon. Went up to Seattle and beat Seattle in a do or die game. I mean, that's the story. And that's what I know. Stanton is not liked by the fans in Arizona. What is he now? 8-1 in his last 9 starts, or 7-1 in his last 8 starts?
Something like that.
Like, this dude just wins football games. And it's something you and I have talked about, the difference in Gabbert and Stanton. Yeah, he had the bad interception, but Drawn quit on the route too. But it's still an inexcusable throw. But Stanton puts the Cardinals in a position to win games by not making mistakes. He doesn't put them in a position to fail.
He kind of blew my interception rate out of the last couple of weeks. But before he had the interceptions, they had a lead. And that's the thing. And what we saw with Stanton is kind of the same thing early, what we saw with Blaine Gabbert early on, is that they came out quick, they were executing well, and then they got cold in the second half. The difference was Stanton turned it around. And one of my big takeaways was this. This running game, where did it come from? Because they completely dominated the line of scrimmage in the first half. It stopped in the second half, but then on the game-winning drive, they gained yards in the running game, and it was the ability to run the ball. But, as bad as the running game was, they finished rushing for over 100 yards in 5 of their last 6 games. And 4 of those 5 were with Kerwin Williams, a guy, Kerwin Williams and Elijah Penny. Nobody outside of Arizona has any idea who these guys are. And they turned the running game around behind a makeshift offensive line. That was quite impressive. The defense was lights out. You knew Seattle was coming back, because if there's one thing we know about the Seahawks, they are a mentally tough team. The stats bear it out. Russell Wilson, of his 32 touchdown passes, 18 came in the fourth quarter. You knew they were going to come back, and they did. And then the Cardinals won. Now, granted, it took a missed kick. We will take it, and the Cardinals win. It was a great, fun game. I was overjoyed to watch that, to have the ending that it was, to see them dominate defensively early, to see them dominate offensively, to see Drew Stanton play really well. It's just the difference between Drew Stanton and Carson Palmer is that he can get really cold. Carson Palmer, even when he's off, still makes nice throws. When Drew Stanton or Blaine Gabbert are off, the ball's not getting, you're getting 9 straight incompletions.
Right, and it's ugly football. It is what it is. But, yeah, like you said, this game was – I think it was a nice send-off for BA. I think it kind of – a nice way to kind of book in the career of BA. I've seen a lot of takes on BA, and we'll talk about this, but I've seen a lot of takes on BA, which has been, kind of surprising how everybody is the way that BA is looked at, I think, will differ from the reality or maybe who they were. Because sour milk or being in the punch bowl or whatever. But let's not forget they were 15, 16, and and one over the last 2 years. So, this wasn't a team that was a juggernaut. This was a team that I think the biggest thing that we're gonna come out of this game, and you and I have talked about this kind of ad nauseum lately, but
what
the biggest
if
thing is going to be the what if, what, you know, what if, what team not seemingly catch a break where, and I know other teams don't as well. Look at those poor Philadelphia Eagles this year, but what if one time,
you know what that is? That is karma for Tyrann Mathieu.
Right, exactly. but what if they could have just stayed healthy one time? Just once. Yeah. And that's unfortunate because I think BA did a lot of nice things, but there's always gonna be with him and Carson, there's always going to be that mystery that hangs over them.
Yes, and so with that, we will move on after the break. We'll talk about Bruce Arians, everything about the retirement, everything about the coaching search that's going on right now. That's coming up next on Rise Up, See Red. We're back on Rise Up, See Red. It's time to talk Bruce Arians coaching, coach search, and everything. Now, the report was a month ago from Craig Fooey over at ABC 15 that Arians was going to retire. That was laughed off. Now, the story wasn't, yes, he's going to retire. It was people around the league said, yeah, he's not coming back. Then they came up again. They laughed it off. Aaron said nothing's been decided. His son was belligerent. So everyone pretty much here locally sits on it and says, we don't know yet. Let's wait till we find out. And then the national guys got it. Ian Rappaport got it. Adam Schefter got it Sunday morning, and you got something on it, but locally there were people were still saying, hey, we don't, I mean, people we've talked to, he hasn't told the coaches, he hasn't told the players, people who said they, of course they told the front office, he hadn't told the front office. I didn't think it was likely going to happen until the report during the game is that BA met with Michael Bidwill Sunday morning. And I thought, oh, that coincided with whatever leak that got Adam Schefter his source. So, yes, it was probably going to happen. He retires. Were you surprised?
No, and you and I kind of text on Sunday morning. I wrote an article Saturday night, posted Sunday morning after a guy that I trust reached out to me and said, just so you know, This is the end for BA. This is his last game. I said, well, how sure are you? He goes, 99%. And so, you know, obviously 99% is not 100%. Not saying like it's locked in, it's a done deal. But I think BA kind of explained that. Like he knew he was going to retire before the game started. And then when Seattle missed that kick, I think he was like, yeah, this is the right decision. Like,
yeah.
And so I think that's what the 99% was. And so I wasn't surprised. I can say this, and I don't mean this in a negative way, because I don't want to begin the discussion of or look back on the time under Arians as negative. But I will say this, and I don't want to steal it. So you can kind of tell me or tell our listeners what it's like. But it's like when somebody else that was maybe at the tail end of their game, but still the best option for the here and now or for 2018 left and kind of left them in an awkward, maybe not high and dry spot. And maybe it won't be as bad, but it just feels similar where it was 1 year sooner than maybe we were expecting.
Yeah, I was telling you before the show, it was Kurt Warner'd us. And it wasn't to that extent because this was weeks leading up to it. This was always a possibility. But, you know, Warner was at the top of his game. You felt they had one more year, and they'd be set. This has been, and I'll say probably I mean, this is going to discount. Yes, Ken Wilson got the Super Bowl. I'm going to say Arians was the best Cardinals coach that they've ever had. If you look at that five-year run, there's never been another five-year run like it. No, he didn't get to the Super Bowl. He did get to the NFC Championship game. He had the injuries. But look, in that five-year run, the worst season was 2016. And they were 7-8-1. And it took horrifically bad special teams to do that. That was a 10-11-12 win team if it weren't just god awful on special teams. This year they're 8-8 with guys off the street. They had even Ken Wisenhunt. I mean, it took him 6 years to get 49 total wins. BA, they got 50 wins, including the playoff win, in 5 years. They won 10, they won 11, they won 13. Their bad years were mediocre. And even, and I've said it several times, the Cardinals the last 2 years haven't been bad. They've been almost good. And they should have been good. That's the part that was so disappointing. They should have been good. And that's what, and so, but with one thing with Arians, he achieved almost everything, but left the job undone because part of what his job was to put a quarterback in place for the future, which he did not do. And that's the only thing, for me, the only thing that I wish he'd been here one more year. I wanted 2018 to be the year that they brought in the quarterback. They had Carson Palmer one more year. It might have ended up being another 7-9, 8-8 year, but he had them in position so he could say, okay, now I'm done, and you've got the young defense, and now we've got the quarterback in place. And another year, and I think you go with, rather than the, we'll talk about the coaching search, you then have a retirement contingency in where you maintain, for the most part, the staff, where you have either a Harold Goodwin or a James Betcher or even Byron Leftwich, who BA believes will be an up-and-comer in the next couple of years, kind of take over and maintain the same sort of thing that happens with the staff, kind of not to the same extent, because when Bill Cowher retired in Pittsburgh, they did choose to go with Tomlin over Grimm or Wisenhunt. But they did keep a lot of their staff, where they had continuity after that. And so it ends up ending abruptly like it did with Warner, like with the job just a little bit undone.
Yeah, and I'm with you on that. And it's unfortunate because it feels like, again, it's not that he left them high and dry, but I mean, when you look at
the team's going to be, we're looking at an overhaul.
Right. When you look at the cupboard, it's definitely more stocked in terms of defense than offense. Like, I mean, a lot of people are saying, well, they have DJ. Well, it's great that they have David Johnson. Assuming Larry Fitzgerald is coming back. I think we are on this podcast, right? We're assuming Fitz comes back one more year.
I am making no such assumption. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. I honestly expect him to retire. Okay. Unless that's where I'm at. I mean, no BA, no Palmer. Is he really going to go through another? I don't know.
And so that's where we're at, right? Like, they literally have one player and maybe two if you want to count DJ Humphreys, right? I mean, who else do they have on offense without Larry Fitzgerald? Even if you throw Larry Fitzgerald in there, you're only talking about 2018. Like, you're not going, well, we have this guy to build around. You're saying, okay, well, we have this piece that can help us in 2018 bridge the gap. But so, yeah, the offense is it's a complete teardown, overhaul, rebuild, whatever you want to call it. The offense is completely needs to be fixed. But they have a defense. And so I liken this, the Denver situation under John, going from John Fox to
Vance Joseph,
Gary Kubiak.
Coops, yes.
And you know, that worked out in year one. Now, I'm not saying the Super Bowl by any means. Like, you know, I don't want anybody to say, oh, Seth's calling for a Super Bowl win. No, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that, you know, they had John Fox. They finished 12-4, and they let him go. And things, you know, immediately got better. But the difference was, and this is, you know, we'll talk about this with the coaching search. The difference was more, they were a great offense and a good defense, and then they went to being an okay offense and a great defense. So that's the one kind of difference. And so with the Denver thing is, they hired Kubiak, Peyton's arm fell off, but they brought in Wade Phillips, who is maybe the best defensive coordinator in the NFL. And he fixed that defense, whatever was ailing it, and that was what turned it around. Well, the Cardinals have a good defense. Is it as good as Denver's 2014 version? I'm not sure. Talent-wise, maybe not quite as good, but I still think it's a really good unit. And so that's the question is how quick of a rebuild or kind of a patchwork offense can you put together to face off against the NFC West? And in that same sense, what looks like a really competitive NFC for the next couple seasons.
Now, as we look at the situation now, the Cardinals have they're looking for certain things. Michael Bidwell said there are three big traits. Need to be a leader. That's, I think, every team looks for that. They want someone that can promote accountability of the culture, the accountability that they have. I don't know if that's how different that is than any other organization, but it seems that Bruce Arians what we saw with the 5 years with BA under Steve Keim, you know, BA being in the league for so long and Keim being a first-time general manager, I think BA really shaped in some way how Keim goes about things in the organization, that his fingerprints will likely be around the organization for some time, his effect moving forward. The other one that's kind of an interesting thing, Michael Bidwell said they were looking for a candidate who's had a track record of performance, I'm going to call success, a track record of performance at different places, different personnel, different things. So it's kind of interesting that you hear that and you think, oh, okay, someone who's got experience, it doesn't necessarily, maybe not the hotshot young court, you know, like a Sean McVay who's younger than even you when you're a baby, Seth, and you and your million kids, you're a baby. He's even younger than you, and he's coaching in the NFL. And then the names come out. So far, there's nine names that are out there now. The first two were QB coach for the Eagles, John DeFilippo, and Minnesota offensive coordinator Pat Shurmur. Mike Jarecki then tweeted a few other names that came out. Brian Flores, linebacker coach for the Patriots, Matt Patricia, their DC, Jim Schwartz, Philadelphia's DC, former head coach, Steve Wilkes, defense coordinator, assistant head coach in Carolina. Then on Tuesday, there were some more names, Mike Munchak, offensive line coach, former head coach, and then Keith Armstrong, special teams coordinator for the Falcons, and James Betcher getting an interview. Probably doesn't look like the Harold Goodwin, which is interesting.
Yeah, and so the first thing that always comes up with these coaching things is, you know, is this candidate just a Rooney Rule interview? And
they got a few. I saw of that. Here's on, there's multiple. So you've got Flores, you've got Armstrong, and you've got Wilkes. And so you've got
And so, yeah, so we can, you and I can say with complete 100% certainty that none of those guys are being brought in as Rooney Rule interviews because, well, they've already got three. So why would they keep bringing in, you know, guys that they didn't want to interview? And so
if they wanted a Rooney Rule interview, all they had to do was interview Goodwin.
Right, exactly. And so, that was kind of be my point. And so I've seen the question about Flores and Armstrong. And they're two coaches on the complete opposite ends of the spectrum. Armstrong is a 54-year-old special teams coordinator the last 16 years. No, last 20 years, right? As just a special teams coordinator. No OC or DC experience at all.
He had position day. He had defensive backs and safeties in the mid-90s, but since 1997, special teams.
Meanwhile, Flores is being kind of groomed as the heir apparent to Patricia, who is being groomed as the heir apparent to Belichick, if you kind of read between the lines of Patriots Twitter and Patriots information. The interesting part about both of those guys is that they aren't necessarily in terms of guys that would make sense in what they're looking for as guys that have been successful in a vast majority of roles. I mean, I guess Flores would be because he's been a scout, a pro scout, a special teams assistant, been the special teams coach safeties, and then coach linebackers. So he's coached all over the defense, but he's never been even a coordinator. And then Armstrong, like we said, he's dabbled in the secondary as a secondary coach, but I mean, we're talking 20 years as a special teams coach. And so those names immediately interested me of what they're looking for with these guys. And the other thing, like I said, is Flores is 38 this year, or 37. Sorry. He'll be 37 this year. So he's, you know, he's fairly young in terms of coaching age. Now experience, he's been coaching for the Patriots, and he's only been with the Patriots since 08-09. He was a scout first and started scouting in 04. So he's been with the Patriots for 14 years now. Obviously, if you grow up in the Belichick system, there's going to be people are going to want to get to know you, right? Because let's just be completely open and honest. Is there another system in the NFL that is as revered and respected as the Patriots? And I would say no.
And the fact that it's not only the Belichick coaching tree, he's a Parcells guy. And so that royalty, it's coaching royalty that they have there.
So, you know, you look at those two immediately jump out at me as I want to know why. Like, I want to dig deeper. They don't necessarily fit that criterion that you just read off, right? They're not necessarily the guys that mind. In the same vein, you talked about Mike Munchak. He's a guy that we talked about this a little bit before the show. His coaching career is kind of fascinating because he's the complete opposite of most coaches. Munchak played for the Houston Oilers back in the 80s until the early 90s, then was a offensive assistant, and then was the offensive line coach for Jeff Fisher the entire time that I think it was 97 until 2010. So he made the transition from Houston to Tennessee, was part of that group. and was just the offensive line coach. Never elevated, never got another title, was just offensive line coach. They fired Fisher and they hired Munchak. And he, I mean, when you look at guys that are on this list that have been head coaches, his record is the best of the bunch from a head coaching perspective. Yeah, so 22 and 26 in three seasons. Again, we're not talking about a guy that, you know, we're not talking about a guy that won Super Bowls or did anything great, but he, you know, it wasn't awful. And then, but he was very average. Everything about him was average. 9-7, 7-9, you know, the type of seasons. And so, and then he got fired and now he's with the Steelers. So he's literally coached for two teams his entire career. And he's line coach in Pittsburgh. And you go to the, you know, and I'm not trying to pimp SB Nation blogs, but if you go to the Behind the Steel Curtains blog, they talk more about the fear of losing Munchak than they do about Todd Haley, who's the offensive coordinator. So it's fascinating how much this guy is respected and revered by fans and his peers, but it just seems like another one of those odd fits into what, again, the criteria that they set forth when they talked about it. Now, obviously, the head coaching experience trumps anything that Flores or Armstrong have done, but as you pointed out when we were talking about this before the show, there's not really a whole lot of diversity in his background, right? Like when they talked about a diverse and successful background, well, he's been a very good offensive line coach for a really long time. And that's about the extent you can say that he's had success. I mean, like we said, his head coaching record's not awful by any means.
But it wasn't, I mean, right. He was basically another Jeff Fisher. Right?
Right, exactly. Very, very average. The definition of average. That's what he was.
The name that intrigues me actually the most, that just that pops out at me on this list, not because I like him, but just like, wow, Jim Schwartz, a guy who we've seen kind of sort of melt down a couple of times, but he, very strong defensive guy, puts him in a fantastic defenses over in Detroit, but couldn't get the offense, despite having a Matthew Stafford, couldn't do more with him. But I was actually on the radio. I made an appearance on AM 1060 on Tuesday afternoon, and Derek Kennard, who used to be with the Cardinals, was on the show, and he said, as a former NFL player, the one guy that kind of pops out at him is Schwartz, because especially for the older guys in that locker room, he will be the one that commands the most respect right away. But
yeah,
he's got to nail the offensive coordinator if he's going to have success here.
Well, and I think that goes to Flores, to Armstrong, and to Munchak as well. I told you off the air, I thought the biggest downfall to Munchak was his coordinator hires, because the two guys he hired to begin his career in Tennessee, neither of those guys are still in the NFL working. None of them got another coordinator position. So obviously he whiffed very badly on that. When you look at Schwartz, his numbers are really interesting, because, you know, he's been a DC for just 11 seasons. So he's been a defensive coordinator for 11 seasons. And he's got 5 seasons in that time with a defense that was top 10. But then he also has 5 seasons in that time with a defense that was 20th or worse, including a couple defenses that finished 32nd in yards allowed. So, but you look at it this year, he's got maybe the top defense, one of the best defenses in the NFL in Philadelphia. It's definitely going to be a different guy, right? Like a whole different personality than Bruce Arians.
He's not warm and fuzzy at all. He's not affable. No. He's gristly and gruff. It's kind of like, and the image I have of him is that exchange with Jim Harbaugh on post game. I still cannot get that out of my mind when it looked like he was trying to start a fight. But if you, if there's one team of that group, if there's a team, if you want your team to take on the characteristic of your coach, you don't mind having them have that super, super tough, that trait, have the head coach. Now, the problem is he's kind of a little bit unstable in my mind and sometimes. Right. And you don't want that, but you want, like what Bruce Arians was able to do, they were no risk of no biscuit, but they never doubted themselves. They didn't always execute, but they didn't doubt that they couldn't. They didn't doubt that they could come back. Now, they weren't as mentally tough as, say, as a Seattle team, which you see, I don't know how they do it. They play bad in the first half and just always come back and win, or almost win, almost inexplicably. Russell Wilson is a magician. But I'm most intrigued by the fact that their candidates are also very different. You've got offensive guys, you got defensive guys, you got old guys, young guys, you've got a special teams guy.
You've got two guys that aren't even coordinators. Actually three when you put in the special teams coordinator. You know, he's a coordinator, but of special teams. I mean, you've got two position coaches that you're here. I think the three names that are going to garner the most interest, and that's because they're going to be the three hot names. And so, you know, we've mentioned Armstrong from Atlanta. We've mentioned Mike Munchak. We mentioned Brian Flores from New England, and then Jim Schwartz. Obviously, we didn't mention him, so we probably should. James Betcher, like you said, he's interviewing with the Cardinals. We have not heard anything about Harold Goodwin getting an interview, which is slightly interesting. But I think the three names that are going to interest everybody to begin with. Oh, and I guess we should talk about Steve Wilks before we get to the three names. So Steve Wilks, he was the first name given to me by one of the guys I trust. Some guy told me that that Arians wasn't coming back. The Panthers, here's what I can tell you about him that I know about him. The Panthers think so highly of him, the assistant head coach. When you look at, obviously he's only got 1 year of work. So finished seventh in yards this year, 11th in points. I think Cardinals fans would be happy with that, I would assume. And so, you know, but he's a guy that he's worked with defensive backs a lot. That's his kind of his thing. He was a head coach for 1 year at Savannah State in college. He's been a defensive coordinator for three different colleges, and then he got into big colleges now as a defensive backs and secondary coach before getting into the NFL. He's worked with the Redskins, the Bears, and the Chargers as a defensive back coach. So three organizations, Panthers. He's been with the Panthers since 2012. And like I said, they, in 2015, they made him assistant head coach and defensive back coach in order to make sure that they didn't lose him. He worked with Lovie Smith in Chicago during their Super Bowl run when they had that fantastic secondary. So, you know, he's a guy that's highly thought of, really well-liked. His defense is aggressive. And I would say this, if you're going to move to a 4-3, because we just talked about Jim Schwartz, and I know 4-3 and 3-4 are very arbitrary terms now. The Cardinals play a 4-2 or a or even like a 3-3.
Their basis is a type of, it's basically 5-2 or 4-2. Like 5-2 for running, it's a 3-4, but their defensive end, their outside linebackers are basically set into the edge. So they're basically playing with a 5-man line in base and 4-man line on passing
and nickel
downs.
And
yeah.
Yeah. But if you're going to make kind of a change, if you're going to make a maneuver, and you talked about Jim Schwartz, and he runs, you know, kind of, he has a wide nine technique where he takes his defensive ends, especially on passing downs, and puts them out really, really super wide outside that offensive tackle or even the tight end in pass rushing situations and has them kind of just go. I think, you know, you're going to get a lot out of that from Chandler Jones. I do worry a little bit about Marcus Golden's fit in that, but, you know, we'll cross that bridge when it comes to it. But Wilkes intrigues me because of what he has done with Thomas Davis and Shaq Thompson. If you bring in Wilkes, who's a guy, who are two guys that we've kind of lamented their stagnation or lack of growth, and that's Deion Buchanan and Hassan Reddick. And I don't know if those guys will ever get to the level of Thomas Davis, but by God, I would love for a guy like Wilkes, who has worked with, you know, Thomas Davis and Shaq Thompson, to be able to help mold them. That would be, I mean, if you're going to sell me on Steve Wilkes, it's that he's going to put, you know, he's going to help Robert Kendiche, and that you're going to get the most out of Buchanan and Reddick with a guy like him.
And for me, the guy we actually didn't talk much about is Pat Shurmur. And in terms of what Michael Bidwell said, now I think they're going to see a little bit of variation on that. He does fit the bill almost perfectly, because he's been in the NFL. I mean, we're starting with his NFL experience starts in 1999. He's been with many different teams, been with the Eagles, been with Rams, been with the Browns, been the Eagles, the Vikings, and he's done a little bit of everything. Coach tight ends, coach offensive line, coach quarterbacks, offensive coordinator. He was a head coach for 2 years. He was offensive coordinator. He was an interim coach. Then he was tight ends coach. Then he's been the offensive coordinator for the last season plus for the Vikings. He's worked with lots of different, I mean, you know, he was the head coach for the Browns. He took over for Chip Kelly. And then
I think for me, the thing with Shurmur is this. His offenses consistently get better when they're at the bottom. And you look at the Rams, that was his first OC gig. That was the final year of who is the Mark Bulger. That was the final Mark Bulger year. Ugh, right? And they were bad. I mean, they were really, I think they averaged like 11 points per game. Like, that's how bad they were. And then the next year, he really helped mold Sam Bradford in his first year. You look at Bradford's stats, they're not great by any means, but you compare them to other rookies and you're like, ah, this guy did a nice job, and that got him the Cleveland job. He had Colt McCoy's first year, and their offense was bad. Oh, man, was it bad. But then he got Braden Whedon as a second year, and you know, he got fired, and that's unfortunate. But they improved offensively, and it was statistically Whedon's best season as a quarterback. It wasn't great by any means, but for a rookie, now literally 29. So different type of rookie, but.
He's having success with Case Keenum. Case Keenum looks good.
Right. And he's a guy that with Arians quite a bit. And when you look at it overall, I think the biggest mistake that you often see with these guys is that they look at their system and go, my system works, use it, instead of saying, this is the talent I have. Let's put the talent, but let me adapt my system to what works. And Shurmur is not that guy. Shurmur's the guy that goes, this is my talent, let me adapt to it. And I wrote about, you know, kind of his background and everything on Revenge of the Blocks or Revenge of the Birds today. And my one, I don't know where you're at, but he's my top guy. And the reason why is because I think he would come in with a plan at quarterback immediately. I've texted Jess this. I think the ideal thing would be able to get Shurmur trade for a veteran older guy, or even sign him if he gets cut, like an Alex Smith, and you have 2 years of that while you either draft a guy that falls to you at 15 or in the second round if you like a guy, or you have another year to draft a guy. But if just from what he has done with different quarterbacks, I think Shurmur has a really good record of getting the most out of the most talent out of the quarterback that he's working with. Now, it's not always the most talented quarterback, but I think he gets the most out of them. On the flip side, if I'm going to draft, if you're the Cardinals and you're saying I'm going to draft, let's just say Sam Darnold is going to declare, we don't even know if he is, but I'm going to draft Sam Darnold and I'm going to trade up to two to get do it. I'm not saying this is going to happen. I don't think it's going to happen, but I'm just saying if you're going to do that, the guy I want is John DeFilippo out of Philadelphia, because you look at what he's done with Carson Wentz. When you're talking about a guy with that much talent, and man, has he made that look good? But you're going to have to do a whole lot of selling, in my mind, to Steve Keim to make that argument, to make that move up from 15 to 2. So when you look at it, with DeFilippo, the concern is that he's only been a coordinator once for one season, and then he was let go. And unfortunately, much like Pat Shurmur, it was with the Cleveland Browns. So how much weight can you put on that? I do want to ask you honestly, like, how much weight can you put on what happened with a coach in Cleveland?
Wait, really, what can you? You can't do, I mean, you have to hope that he can talk about what he learned, because, I mean, Bill Belichick was a coach in Cleveland. No one thought he was great then. He turned into a wizard in New England, but he started off being a middling coach in Cleveland. So,
right, and so you know, Shurmur and DeFilippo, like, they're both going to have to answer questions about that. Like, why did you fail in Cleveland, and why is this time going to be different? But I will say this: the guy that bull about the Browns, he's more attention to the Browns. No, it's not Justin. He pays attention to Ohio State. He acts like the Browns don't even exist. but when I asked him about the Browns, he the loss of DeFilippo more than Shurmur. So, you know, maybe DeFilippo's guy, or maybe Shurmur rubbed people the wrong way there. I'm not sure. But the last name, though, is the one that, you know, I read an interesting article from a Patriots beat writer, and the name's Matt Patricia, and he said he didn't even mention the Cardinals with Patricia, but he did say that Josh McDaniels, who the Cardinals haven't even put in a request for, as far as I know, I mean, unless you've seen something different, but that the Cardinals would be the worst fit for McDaniels. And I was kind of, I don't want to say taken aback by that, but really? Like, the Cardinals' job's that bad?
Well, maybe it's because you don't want him choosing the quarterback.
Right, because he's going to want Tebow again. So, but in Patricia is a guy that his defenses have not terms of bridge, but he's literally in all five seasons he has had a top 10 defense in scoring defense every season as a defensive coordinator. So results, obviously, actual, like, very intelligent guy, because he's an astrophysicist, so he's he's obviously a brilliant guy. So the question, six seasons. So yeah, every season in six seasons, he's had a top 10 scoring defense. And so the question is kind of the question that you brought up who's your OC? Like, who's going to run this offense? And I think it has to be answered well, because I don't think you can have this defense and not fix the offense. Why not just hire James Betcher? Do it, right?
Right, and that's for me, that's kind of the intriguing thing, because if you want to sort of maintain the Arians impact, you take a guy like Betcher, who is kind of his handpicked guy, and let him develop it. Now, according to what Mike Direk is reporting, that his staff would include a lot of guys not currently on the staff, with a bunch of people who have lots of experience, which, I mean, that's normal. But you already know defensively that they'd be good with Betcher. Whether he'd call plays or not, that's another story, but he'd have his fingerprints on that. But for every candidate, there's a question for the other side of the ball. Okay, this guy can develop some quarterback that we get. What's going to happen defensively? This guy is going to be great defensively. We know that. But what are they going to do on offense? I mean, what are they going to do with the quarterback? It's kind of the conundrum across the board. A name that I know that I talked to you about, he hasn't come up. This is just me throwing it. I'm matchmaking. A guy that I put on my list of guys that would fit is Frank Reich, the offensive coordinator for Philadelphia. If you're checking the boxes, he checks all those boxes. He's got a variety of experience because he's coached receivers. He's coached quarterbacks. He's been offensive coordinator. He's been a lot of different teams. He was with the Colts. He was with the Cardinals. He was with the Chargers. And who has he worked for? He's worked with Ken Wisenhunt. He's worked with quarterbacks like Peyton Manning and Phillip Rivers. He's helped with Carson Wentz. His name hasn't come up. That's a name to me that is intriguing because of his diverse background and the track record that he has. And the fact that there is a little bit of familiarity as well here.
Yeah, and I think that would be a good one. I'm interested to see if this is the final, what do we say, nine?
There's nine names out there right now.
Yeah, if this is kind of the final list, or if there are more, the first wave. The hard thing is, are any of these guys sure? None of these guys are on teams that are out of the playoffs yet, right?
They've got a few they can interview this week.
Right. And so that's the whole thing, is they got to interview these guys before the window closes, which I believe is Saturday or maybe it's Sunday. I could be wrong, but to go back to their teams that they're still coaching on to do things for the playoffs. So, like a jerk, I think Schwartz will be available shortly. I don't trust Nick Foles at all. Washington from the guy from Atlanta will be available shortly, because I don't trust Atlanta at all. But you know, the Steelers and Shurmur, and then be available shortly because he's with the Eagles, but then obviously the Patriots guys, you have to assume they're probably going to be in at least the championship game. So that's going to put things at the end of January for that. Steve Keim necessarily isn't in a hurry to answer this question, right?
No, and they showed the patience before. In 2013, Bruce Arians was the last of the head coaches hired, and his name didn't come up at all until the very end. And the interesting thing is, this time around, there's way more names that we hear. I recall three or four names. I can't remember off the top of who they were. Three or four names that came up in the 2013 coaching search. And then when they hired Arians, Michael Bidwell talked about, there were a whole bunch of others that we interviewed that no one reported. We have nine names within 24 hours of his retirement, which is weird. So it's gonna be interesting to see what happens. I wonder if they're gonna pull the trigger quickly. If, for example, if Shurmur is a guy that they really are targeting, or something like that, if they'll pull the trigger early to not have to wait. But they showed patience before. I think we need to move on to the final segment where we can talk about Carson Palmer and give him his due, even though we're already on over an hour, guys. But since you're already listening, you're going to keep listening, or you can pause it and come back to it. No big deal. So coming up next on Rise of C, we're going to talk about Carson Palmer, the quarterback situation. And that's coming up next on Rise of C Red. We're back on Rise of C Red. Carson Palmer announced his retirement out of the blue. I mean, it's not a surprise, but it was out of the blue because no one scooped it. Nobody in the media nationally, locally had said. Even ESPN's Josh Weinfuss asked Carl Palmer on Sunday after the game if he was going to retire. Guess what Palmer did? He chuckled and walked away. Like, he wasn't going to answer that question at all. But 2 days later, he makes he threw a letter that he releases through the team, announces his retirement. And so the Cardinals are left with no quarterback on their roster. Palmer's retiring, and the other guys are free agents. All of them. Drew Stanton, Blaine Gabbert, Matt Barkley. So, well, first, are you surprised about the Palmer decision? I'm certainly not, because I think he might have come back if Arians come back, but I think once he knew that Arians was not coming back, there was no reason to belabor this and to wait for his body to recover or whatever, even though his body's already recovered at this point. There was no need for him to try and go through the change of everything, especially when the Cardinals might have cut him anyway.
Right. And so I think what happened was, once Palmer got confirmation on Arians retiring, that it was time, right? Like, at that point, it's time. Like, you move on. And that's our concern with Larry, not to get sidetracked, but that's the concern with Larry, is that what is this new coach going to want me to do? What are they going to ask me to do? And for Carson, comfortable situation, and it was a comfortable situation because of Coach Arians. He knew what he was getting into every year. Let's be honest, we beat him a little bit, right? So when you look at that, was he going to get the same type of treatment from a new coach? Or was he going to have to put in even more work than what the asinine amount of work that he puts in is? And he does. He puts in a ton of work. I mean, you and I have talked about it before. You know, he loves it. And so I do wonder how much that had to do with it, as well as what you said. There is the unknown of, coach even want me? Would the new coach come in and say, look, Carson's not my guy. Can we make some salary cap space with the release of him? It wasn't so much that they were tied hand in hand, but they really were. I mean, let's be honest. Palmer were tied together as soon as
they traded for him, honestly.
As soon as they brought in Carson Palmer,
and didn't draft anyone, Arians,
right? Exactly. And so now it's just kind of time to move on. And Carson, I think I saw tweeted out today, has made just under $175 million,
and just made $2 million off the sale of his helm in Delmar that just sold his beach house. So hey,
right. So, yeah. So again, like, it got to a point where I think uncertainty, like you said, you know, was he going to be a cap casualty? But I think the other thing is, you know, how much did he want to put in for one more year? Because he wasn't under contract for 2019. It was going to be the end. This was the last year. And this is kind of what we alluded to when we talked about Arians, Kurt Warnering them, was, It seemed like 2018, with the Fitz 1 year contract, with all of the guarantees, it's only $6.6 million, but all the guarantees in the Palmer contract, and with Arians having 1 year left on his deal, it seemed like 2018 was the sweet spot, right? Like, we saw this all coming. And then once Arians decided in October, November, December, or January 1st, whatever the story is, whenever Arians decided that he was going to retire, it just made sense that Carson followed, because it was 1 year. Is he really going to want to put all that work in, no matter how much fun he says he has? It's fun when you know it. All of a sudden, it becomes a little bit different. And even Carson said, and you've and I've talked about this, Carson Palmer is not a guy that ever really showed emotion, right? But he's always been the cool kind of collected surfer guy. But those first eight games under Arians, he was frustrated visibly, and you know, even in the media with the questions about him and his skill. And I think once Arian said, this is it, I think that was it.
Well, like he said, how do you know? You know. I just knew it. You knew it when BA said he was retiring. Well, that and you broke your arm on a hit, and you got beat to a pulp in the first half of the season. So, it, I mean, it made sense. Now, here's the thing. They saved $14 million on the salary cap, but they still have more than $6 million on the books. And is a cap, you know, is the dead money. Don't think that, you know, you're going to replace Carson Palmer with someone that equal with only $14 million of cap space. So for you fans who have been waiting and been ready to move on from Carson Palmer, let me just tell you, buyer beware. Carson Palmer is a special quarterback. So you get what you want, but you might not like what you get, because we've seen this before. We saw this before after Kurt Warner, and it was a disaster. Carson Palmer is that caliber of quarterback. Now, he didn't put up always, it wasn't always the same performance, but what we always saw when he was protected, he was one of the best quarterbacks in football, one of the most productive, make big throw after big throw. Drew Stanton and Blaine Gabbert, what do you notice? They didn't make clutch throws. Carson Palmer makes clutch throws, big time throws at big moments, even when he's doing badly, like he's having an off day, it still isn't what we've seen from the other two guys that started this year. So just understand, you might regret his leaving, because $14 million doesn't get you a great quarterback. You have to hit the lottery like they did with Palmer. $14 million is not going to get you Carson Palmer. $14 million is going to get you Mike Glennon, right?
Oh, man. Why do you have to ruin my night? I mean, I've already been tweeted at that they're going to go after Brock Osweiler today. So I'm really not in the mood for jokes. So thanks, Carson. Thanks, Bruce Arians. You've ruined the entire offseason for Jess and I. And now we're not going to talk.
Well, actually, about you on this. You've ruined it for us as fans. You've made our lives incredibly busy as writers.
Right, exactly. So no, I mean, I think you're right, and I think that's the biggest thing is, and it's what we kind of have talked about and talked around on this show, that quitting, and with Palmer retiring, you're not coming in here and selling us, and obviously us being the fans, but you're not just coming in here and selling us on your vision, but you're going to have to sell us on, you're going to have to show us your vision, right? Like, you don't get to come in here and say like, oh, we're going to draft a quarterback. We have Carson Palmer in the room already, so he's going to have a great leader. No, man. I mean, like, you're starting from scratch on that offense. And So when we talk about Jim Schwartz or Brian Flores or any of these guys, Matt Patricia, James Betcher, even as defensive coordinators, they're going to have to knock that offensive coordinator position out of the park, because they're going to have to come in and they're going to have to sell you on, this is who my quarterback's going to be. This is who I want for the quarterback in year one and possibly year two. This is what I think of the potential quarterbacks in the 2018 NFL draft. I'm comfortable with X, Y, and Z. Like, all of that matters now. And now all of it is so much more in play, because that was the thing. Even if Palmer wasn't the guy, he was a security blanket, and you hit it on the head. Now you're at $14 million. So you're going to go sign, Mike Glennon when he gets cut. Are you going to go? I mean, you're not even probably going to get like a Jacoby Brissett for that. Are you going to go sign Josh McCown to a 1 year, $14 million deal, so he starts and ends his career in Arizona?
Patrick.
Right. I mean, that's what you're looking at with $14 million. That's what it is. And so
you have to hit the lottery with, you have to hit the lottery with like a Case Keenum and hope he can do what he did this year, or you're giving up a lot for Alex Smith. You're either giving up a lot for someone, paying him a heck of a lot of money, or you're crap shooting with the draft.
Right. Or you're taking a risk on a guy like a Teddy Bridgewater or Sam Bradford, whose health is a ticking time bomb. Like I said, you're at a point now with Carson Palmer. The player was like you said, he was a very good player. He was a guy that put the Cardinals in a position to win a lot of football games. But now without him in the room, there is – and trust me, I'm one of the people that have been ready for a youth infusion at the quarterback position, but I also understood the importance of doing it with Carson Palmer still in the room, because now you're in a really bad spot in terms of the quarterback position.
Nobody.
Nothing.
No, I can almost guarantee you no one in the quarterback room from this year will be back next year. Palmer's retiring. Stan is BA's guy. I don't think, you know.
And he's playing on one leg. The poor guy needs to go have apparently surgery. And
well, he doesn't have an ACL. And so, which kind of explains the injury prone nature of his knee. And, you know, he hurt the knee back in 2014. You know, bone bruise this year. So he's been playing on no ACL. And well, then Gabbert, I don't know if you bring back Gabbert now, because the whole appeal of Gabbert, all of it from the time they signed him, was continuity. Give him year two and you feel confident. I can see a scenario where Gabbert is brought back, probably as your number two, maybe a bridge guy, but that's not a good bridge. We saw it. It's not a good bridge. But I think the quarterback room is going to be completely different this year.
And now that's the thing, is it makes the coaching hire that much more important, because they don't have that lifeline of Carson. And so
or even the security blanket of Drew. None of it.
Yeah, so exactly. So that's what hurts the most about the Palmer the retirement. But like we said, it was obvious and it was coming as soon as BA retired, because it didn't make sense. That's a BA guy. They were kind of locked together, and now it's, you know, now they're moving on, and the Cardinals are moving on, and this show is the show's going to have a lot of content, whether it's now or over the next couple months. The show's going to have a ton of content when we break down the new coach, when we break down the new quarterback, and then we talk about the draft and what is the new guy going to want, and how's it going to differ from kind of what they've been doing in recent years. So it's going to be fun.
And with that, we will wrap up this edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. I believe it is episode 180 of these. I do not lament. I have no hard feelings towards either Carson or Arians, because we are seeing this is the golden age of Cardinals football. 5 years, nothing worse. I mean, 10, 11, 13 wins, nothing less than seven. This is the last 9 years, the last 11 years. Have been something special, and I hope it can continue. And with that, we will sign off. You can find us everywhere that, you know, Block Talk Radio, Audio Boom, Revenge of the Birds, Cards War. You know, all you guys on Apple Podcasts, subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher Radio or TuneIn Radio. Find us, rate us. We'd love a 5-star rating. It'd be fantastic. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. This is the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Go Cardinals, and let's get ready for a big, long, fun off season.